Welcome to the Amateur Movie Review Hour. I'm Trevor, and with me I have Megs, and I have Josh.
Good evening.
This is fake, the thing opening.
That was great.
You like that?
Yeah, I totally knew what you were doing.
It's like a precursor.
Yeah.
You like that?
I had the visual of your hand. You were doing a visual.
I did a visual thing. Yeah. We're not into video yet. We will maybe someday.
If it were video, you would see his hand pretending to open.
You know what I would like? I would like to have cartoon caricatures of us sitting around a table doing this first, though. You know what I mean?
I would like it in the squiggle vision.
A little bit of that.
Yeah, the squiggle drawing, like Dr. Katz. I would like that. Or home movies.
Yeah, some, like, right around there, right around that area.
That would
be
really
cool.
Like,
crude, yet to the point, you know?
Mm-hmm. That would sum me up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Feel free to
send in that art, guys. Yeah.
That would
we need a cartoonist.
That would be cool.
Cartoonist.
Okay. Cartoonist? Is that what it is?
No, that's just something he decided to say.
It's the next thing to a anarchist.
Oh. Have you met a lot of anarchists?
You kidding me?
He's a bartender.
I used to ride the bus.
Nothing but anarchists, huh? Chock full of them.
Chock full of them. They're like, I'm not paying insurance. I'm not buying a car. I'm not part of the establishment.
For this brown moment, I've decided that I'm going to go over Christopher Guest's biography.
All right.
Ooh.
Thank you, Firehouse 4.
Ooh. Ooh,
sounds sexy.
I'm crediting the person who wrote this mini biography that came off of IMDb. I'm citing all my sources.
There you go. It's a great idea.
Just one. Yeah.
You should.
Yeah.
I would call it the six-fingered biography.
Ooh.
Because he was this... The six-fingered man.
He was. That was one of his movies, yeah. Or one of the movies that he was in.
Yes.
He was born in the U.S. He's an actor, director, and writer, and a musician as well as a composer, too.
Mm-hmm.
He's well-known for his mockumentaries, but the first one being that which was Welcome to Spinal Tap, or
This is Spinal Tap.
This is Spinal Tap.
Yep. His full name's Christopher Hayden Guest, and he was born in 1948 in New York City. His mother, Jean Pauline, and then in parentheses, it's either Hindes or Hines, and was a vice president of casting at CBS. And his father, Peter Hayden Guest, was a UN diplomat and was a member of the British House of Lords. His father was the fourth Baron of Selling, S-A-L-I-N-G, in the county of Essex. His mother, Jean, was an American and was the daughter of Russian Jewish immigrants.
I knew there was some Jew going on there. I had this I was like, you're not saying Jew, but I'm feeling Jew. And so it's
you
fine.
You feel when others are around.
Yeah, exactly. It's like there's a sixth sense going on there.
I think it's his paternal. Would that be his mother's side?
Maternal.
So it'd be his father's side.
Yeah.
His great grandfather was a colonel in the British army or whatnot.
Mm.
He received his dramatic arts training at New York City's High School of Arts and Music, and also at Bard College.
Bard College?
Yep, that's what it says. This is what it says.
Yeah.
If you have issues with this, you can take it up with Firehouse 44.
I believe it's a dramatic college. The Bard would be Shakespeare.
That's what I'm figuring. Guest first appeared in minor roles of different genres. Some of those movies were The Hot Rock in 1972, Death Wish 1974.
Ooh.
Lemmings, 1973, and The Long Riders in 1980. On the side, he was dabbling in writing for several TV shows. While filming The Million Dollar Infield in 1982, I've never seen that movie, I don't know what it is. He became acquainted with writer and director Rob Reiner. And they collaborated with McKean and Harry Shearer, and came up with the hit This Is Spinal Tap in 1984. And in the mockumentary, Guest was the lead guitarist, Nigel, and his most famous line is, "This goes to 11, or these go to 11, and he's referring to the volume dial. Then, for a while, he had busied himself in the 1980s as a regular performer on Saturday Night Live, along with fellow Spinal Tap band members, lead singer who was David St. Hobbins, Michael McKean, and the bassist Eric Smalls, played by Harry Shearer. They regularly appeared as Spinal Tap. And then in 92, they released Spinal Tap Break Like the Wind, Dash the Videos in 92. And then they did a Spinal Tap reunion, the 25th anniversary London sellout 1992. Guest had a minor acting role in the courtroom drama A Few Good Men. And also, he did have a role in... The Princess Bride as the Six-Fingered Man. After that, he went on to start directing, writing, and I guess acting in his movies, as the first being Waiting for Guffman, our movie that we're reviewing today. And then they did a Spinal Tap The Final Tour in 1998, followed by Catching Up with Marty DeBurgi, before they decided to write the Dog Championship movie, Best in Show.
I think that's definitely when it mainstreamed.
I think so, yeah. Like,
because those competitions were already pretty big. Because what was that, 2003?
2000. A Mighty Wind was 2003.
Wow, yeah. Okay.
I remember hearing about Best in Show, through commercials, it got a lot of marketing.
It got a lot more money than Guffman did.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there was a lot more money towards it, and that's when, like, Jennifer Coolidge joined and Jane Lynch, and you just had like kind of a, it's not that they were like mainstream actresses yet, but they were. People started seeing them, sure. And they were appearing on TV shows, and people were kind of like, oh, you know, but
yeah,
they really hadn't quite mainstream. It was still limited release in theaters.
Sure,
but,
sure, yeah.
But I think more people saw that than, of course, Guffman.
Yeah, and then A Mighty Wind is a movie about the reunion of the Folkmen, which is a fictional 60s folk music group. And that that got them, as you were saying, I guess an Oscar nod for something.
Yeah, I want to say that the song that is performed by Catherine O'Hare and Eugene Levy, I think that song, the one about the rose, I think that one was nominated for an Oscar, and it was written by, I know it was written by Michael McKean and his wife, O'Toole, but I'm pretty sure that got a nod.
Yeah, it looks like a nominee.
Yeah, A Kiss at the End of the Rainbow was the nominee. It was Michael McKean and Annette O'Toole were nominated for Best Original Song.
Yeah, they did win the Critics' Choice, and then they won some Canadian stuff. And they got the Grammy. They won Grammy.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, like that's probably the more in the music sense. Like, yeah, sure, I believe I believe individuals would like to win an Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is a type of prestigious award given, from what I've understood.
Yeah.
And that's how you get an EGOT.
Yeah, that's very true. And I maybe some of you know, I think you had said this and I had forgotten, a guest is married to Jamie Lee Curtis. And,
since 1984.
Yep. I read something like she either saw a photo or something, and that led to how they met or something. Like in his Spinal Tap costume, I think it was. But just wanted to talk a little bit about Christopher Guest. I thought I was gonna do like what makes an independent movie, but I think that's really,
it's one sentence.
Yeah. No studios, it's done without a major studio. And if you see any type of big name attached to it, it's usually just mostly for distribution purposes. Yeah. What is the Amateur Movie Review Hour? Before we began our podcast, the three of us curated a list of approximately 100 movie genres. We then fed that list to a magical random generator that we used to provide us with a movie genre. The three of us take turns choosing movies to watch that fit into the chosen genre. We then watch that movie and attempt to return bi-weekly to review and discuss that movie. The only movies that we have banned are Marvel and DC movies from the past 15 years. I am not a professional movie reviewer. I just love to watch movies and then review those movies with my friends and you, my fellow screen fiend. This episode's movie is Waiting for Guffman, and the writers were Christopher Guest and Eugene Levy, And the director was Christopher Guest. The actors are Louis Arquette, Bob Balaban, Christopher Guest, Matt Kiesler, Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara, Parker Posey, and Fred Willard. There were two release dates, August 21st, 1996. I think that was at some type of film festival.
Mm-hmm.
Later opening on January 31st, 1997. Runtime is 84 minutes. The reason why I chose this movie is because I'd never seen it. I had heard you two mention it before in passing and talking, mainly in regards to Christopher Guest and like any other people who happen to show up in other movies and have a relation to Christopher Guest. That's it. There's a lot of other movies that I could have chosen, but I'd not seen this one. So I went in with no expectation, and I quite enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Like, there were some slow parts. Yeah, there were some. Wherever they meant it to be funny, I found it hilarious. Like, yeah. they landed that for sure. I found it hilarious in everything that they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
I like the, I like Catherine O'Hara's hair. It has that swoop the entire time. Whatever hairstyle she's wearing in every role that she's playing, it is always up and swooping. Yeah. Like, I love that choice. I don't know if it was whoever made that choice. I loved it. It was great. I like that they had the stool boom. Like they had this thing about the small town that, you know, that one thing that made them famous, and that's what they're gonna do, and they're only gonna do that for the rest of time.
Yeah, they're still hooked on the stool.
Yeah.
The stool capital of the world.
Eugene Levy was great. Yeah, he was great. He always plays to me. It's always that just the straight man. Mm-hmm. Like he's the straight man in the comedy. Yeah. Like the comedy duo. Who's that? Who there's a
Fred Willard.
Fred.
He was so full of himself.
Yes.
As this amazing actor, he was absolutely terrible. They both were.
Yes. Yeah.
But they were so certain that they were just these Hollywood destined stars, you know. Yes. And it was great. I thought Louis Arquette was fantastic.
I loved, he was great,
the late great. But it was funny because even in the movie, when everybody else was so terrible, he was the only one who was actually really good on stage.
Yes, you know. Yes.
So it was kind of that whole like he they just kind of asked him to do something, and he's like, oh, I don't know, but yeah, sure, I'll do this. And he's the only one who pulled it off, whereas everybody else was absolutely
trying
terrible.
So hard. Yeah. And just really sucked at. Like
he was the only natural in the entire.
But that was
movie.
I never really got that until you'd said that. That's why it looked so funny to me.
Well, the setup for that is the long con of it, because he looks like a hillbilly, like trash, like he works at a gas station. And they're just like, hey, bud, we need to do this. She's like, I don't know if I can do it, but I'm too sure we'll try.
Sure.
You know, it's like, and then he gets on there and just, it's perfect.
And he nails it.
You know, it's like, it's the voice of Midwest America.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you have like Fred Willard walking around with his ascot or sometimes his towel tucked into his jogging suit. And, you know, we've worked with Corky before, you know, we're pretty knowledgeable about the way Corky does business, you know, but they're absolutely terrible. And poor Parker Posey is the Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
And,
you
know, everybody else is just, you know, and then you have the dentist who wants to try something new, really. Yes.
Well, I think it was more his wife, really. I think she was the one that wanted to, like, meet people. Yeah, exactly. She's like, I don't care, do fucking whatever, just get new people in here. I'm tired of being with you.
Yeah, and other people with babies.
Yeah, yes. Yep.
It was great. And I love the scene when they went to dinner, you know, and they're just like, you guys must have been out of the country because you're travel agents. And they're like, and she's just wasted. Catherine O'Hara is wasted. And she wants to talk about her husband's penis surgery.
Reduction.
Oh, the reduction.
Yes, he had to have it reduced.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
I love that too.
Yeah. Everything about it was ridiculous and it just hilarious and in true Guest form. But it was just so fun to watch because I didn't know when I first saw this movie in 96, when it first came out on VHS.
Yeah.
This is how long ago I saw it. I rented it at the video store and I had seen previews for it and I'm like, I don't want to watch that. It looks stupid. The only reason I grabbed it was a friend of mine was with me and he was just like, let's get this. And then we watched it again. because we loved it. You know, we're just like, this is the funniest thing we've seen in a while.
It seemed like a smart comedy. Like, like
dry.
It felt like some of the writers, I know it was Christopher Guest and Eugene Levy, but it feels like somebody was watching this movie and then went back to The Simpsons and was like, okay, I'm going to try this comedy style out and this writing style out in this episode and see how it works.
I think it's the way that he writes is two part. So it is actually the writing, the setup, all that stuff, but it also lets the person cast for the role kind of really embody it and make it more of what it is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To where a lot of times it's like, delivery, and that's great. Delivery is great. We all know that. Great writing and great delivery makes greatness. Mm-hmm. But when you have like a comedy that's super dry like this, you know, but it is still funny. It's just that like, ha ha, chuckle funny. But then when the portrayal of it by the people really brings it out.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll kill you. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, just want to jump into our review.
Yeah, I'm fucking thirsty.
All right. Let's do this. Josh has been
dry mouth.
Dry mouth here. Splash. Sploosh. That looks delicious.
It's awful. Wow. It's even worse than it was the last time.
Well, that's not cool.
I don't want that.
No lime and mint.
Don't drink lime with mint.
That's horseshit. Everybody loves that.
I do like a mojito. I like a mojito, but this has no alcohol in it.
Yeah.
Well, it's supposed to simulate alcohol because you're not drinking. So I want you to have that.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome. Thank you for picking this out for me.
Yeah. After the last time
when I was like, that's disgusting.
A delicious tea drink as me and Trevor are drinking, but you're not. So you're having a lime and mint canned cocktail that has no liquor in it. Yeah. So.
Fun.
Well, this mockumentary movie begins with a voiceover of some small town officials discussing placements of porta potties, trash cans, and snipers because of the egging from last year. And they're planning for the upcoming sesquicentennial. Sesquicentennial? I think I got it.
I think you've nailed it.
And it's for this small town, Blaine, in Missouri. There's some stock footage of Blaine, but isn't it somewhere in Texas? Like I thought I saw this was filmed in Lubbock.
Oh, was it?
I think it may have been or Austin. It was Texas. They did want to put on the like welcome to whatever town it is, the home of the stool. Like they wanted to do that to the sign, and the city was like, "No, you're not going to do that."
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it would have been great.
Yeah, Austin.
Austin, okay.
Yeah.
But the stock film gives us a sense that this is, you know, an all-American town. There's kids running around. It's your all-American town from mid-1990s. And Mayor Glenn Welsh, played by Larry Miller, predicts their sesquicentennial will be the gold standard for years to come for everybody in America to live up to. And he talks up the people of Blaine. He's something about 5 good minutes of weather. And the mayor goes on to say, I believe that the people of Blaine are hardworking enough that we can get down to like 3 or 4 minutes. I was like, what the, you can't. It was the first ridiculous thing. Yeah. Like, okay, all right.
That was Larry Miller was the mayor, wasn't he?
Yeah. And he has great delivery too.
He absolutely does. Considering he's a comedian. Mm-hmm. He usually plays the angry, like straight man on film. And he does such a good job. He can be such an asshole in film in roles that he does.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And then it cuts to the town historian Don Lake, who's played by Phil Burgess. He gives a brief history of Blaine, or gives a brief history about Blaine. It was founded by some dude named Blaine Fabin, who was hired by 30 settlers to escort them from Philadelphia to California. After 14 days. Blaine became lazy and told everybody that they had made it to California. Can you smell the salt? Yay. And the settlers were like, all right, that's cool. Well, We'll just stay here. It doesn't matter. We didn't want to go to California anyways. Yeah. We're cool right here in Missouri.
Perfectly happy.
Then the next interviewee is Gwen Fabian Blunt, who is the direct descendant of Blaine Fabian. She is played by Deborah Thaker, Gwen gives some exposition, and she's excited to watch the big sesquicentennial play about her ancestor Blaine. She compares being a Fabian to being exactly like a Kennedy. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. Ridiculous.
You know, in a small town, that is... I mean, she kept her maiden name.
Yes.
She kept the maiden name in there so that everybody would know that she was related to the Fabian family, and she probably brings it up in every conversation. She's, a councilwoman? And so, you know, every time she gives a speech, I'm sure she mentions the fact that she is a Fabian.
A Fabian. Oh, yeah, of course. Of course.
She goes to all the cocktail parties in town, all three of them. Yep. You know?
There's an exterior shot of a two-story turn-of-the-century brick building. As a one Corky St. Clair, played by Christopher Guest, explains his acting and directorial history in New York City prior to coming to Blaine. Corky St. Clair is played as sort of a, I wouldn't say stereotypical gay man, but more feminine. Of a closeted.
Feminine.
Sure.
Yeah, what a closeted gay man would be considered in the 1980s and 90s as incredibly, well... I think you would also say that the way he dressed outrageously, he would call that more of a theater, a theater person, as opposed to a gay person. But
true,
that's what the excuse would be. Well, he's artistic.
Yes.
Back then, it would be like, well, he's artistic.
Yeah, he has a living carpenter.
He likes Asperger's.
When Corky first arrived into Blaine, he had hoped that he was going to be a construction worker. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's like, he wanted the hard hat and everything.
But a hat that goes like...
Yeah, like this? Swoops.
I was trying to explain, like, what kind of hat are you explaining?
Yeah.
It was almost like he was talking about some sort of old, like a Japanese, like warrior hat instead of a construction hat.
Yeah. That's what I was like, okay, I don't know if you've ever seen a construction worker wear a hard hat. Corky then explains that he knew, but he knew that theater was in his blood. He could never give that up. So that's why he decided that he'd offer his services to the local high school. Soon enough, Corky had formed the Blaine Community Players. His interview is followed by Blaine council member and town pharmacist Steve Stark, played by Michael Hitchcock. He is sad that he has to stock his pharmacy and won't be able to make the audition. And I love this part. Corky won't allow him to audition any other day because that's show business. I was like, he just doesn't like you, buddy.
Yeah. And he's so in love with Corky. Uh-huh, like, he is absolutely head over heels.
At the end, he's screaming. Yeah. Like, he's like, Corky!
He's just so in love. Now, that's the closeted gay guy in the movie. Yeah.
And then the movie cuts back to Don Lake, who is now talking about the time that little Jimmy Bean made Blaine the footstool capital of the world. And then we get back to Corky, who's talking about how his stage plays, talking about some of his stage plays. I think one of the two or three that he actually put on. And one of those is the stage version of Backdraft. Or this is where Ron and Sheila are sort of introduced as how they get to know Corky. And Corky goes on to reveal that his stunt for the stage play Corky goes on to reveal that his little stunt for the stage play of Backdraft set the theater on fire because he was like lighting paper on fire and putting it into the vent. And then
said it lightly got smoky.
Yeah.
Then they showed a picture and it is a fucking inferno.
Yeah, the newspaper says theater on fire. It's just the opposite. Like, it's the extreme, you know. The narrator says, it was just a little smoky, the facts would show the opposite. I'm sure there's a term for that I am not aware of. Then we smash cut to Ron and Sheila Albertson, who are played by Fred Willard and Catherine O'Hara. The couple are travel planners who've never been outside of Blaine, Missouri. And this comes up during the dinner. Except for that one time when Ron went to Jefferson City, and he's very reluctant that he had some type of minor surgery. There's an exterior shot of Dairy Queen that's followed by Libby Mae Brown, played by Parker Posey, who's giving an interview. And she's just talking like, yeah, we make sundaes and blizzards. Yeah, I serve ice cream.
The stereotypical small town girl who's never going to leave that
the
town.
Like the pretty small town girl.
Yeah.
Because she's very attractive.
Yes, she is. She's a very attractive girl.
Josh shakes his head.
Yeah.
She's Parker Posey, and she is the queen.
I don't give a fuck who
she's
it is.
She's the queen of the independent film.
She is a lesser than version of Ally Sheedy.
Okay, we're going to take this outside because Ally Sheedy is gross.
I know. They're both gross. That's why there's the lesser version. Nothing against Parker Posey or Ally Sheedy, but I don't know what it is. It just like I feel like she has like a film on her.
Oh, Keith.
Like
you're
there's
just,
like
you're,
something on her at all times, you know?
No.
But that's the part I like about her acting is like
she can act icky. Unlike Ally Sheedy, so no.
Yeah, I'll agree with that because she was really good in what is it, Lost in Space?
Don't talk about that.
I
think she was great in that. She deserved a fucking Oscar.
We're not going to talk about that movie.
I like how you just anytime you're contentious, you're like knife.
I do
knife.
Holding
I've got
a knife. I don't know. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, you're pretty tough. Tough guy. Yeah.
There's a rape whistle on here, too, so just beware.
Is there really? Is there a rape? Oh, that is awesome. So glad you have a rape whistle for your nights walking around by yourself.
Well, I stabbed for it.
I just want you to pull out the knife and then immediately use the rape whistle.
Yeah, in the order of things to happen. First, it would be the window cracker to the face, and then the knife, and then the whistle. Because at that point, I'm like, wow, this guy really won't stop. He really wants some of this, you know? Like if Parker Posey was a rapist, we'll just put it like that.
Mm-hmm.
She's, like I said, covered in like a weird film.
Oh my God.
Like, it just.
You need to stop. You know, I love Parker Posey so very much.
When you have that uncontrollable urge where you're just like, you're like, just dry heaving a little bit, you're like, why am I doing this?
You know, I love her. I didn't like her on As the World Turns. She annoyed the shit out of me when she was on As the World Turns. But
well, that's because that's a
daytime
soap opera.
Then I saw Dazed and Confused, and I changed my tune.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. She was in that.
Mm-hmm. And then I spent the 90s watching nothing but Parker Posey film. And other. Yeah. Well, that's not true. I watched a lot of movies, but Parker Posey was in a lot of them.
Boom.
She's the queen of independent film.
Yep. She worked at a Dairy Queen. Great.
The movie cuts back to Don Lake talking about Roswell and how that was not the first UFO sighting ever. In fact, Blaine, Missouri was responsible for that. They didn't even crash. In fact, they got out and were like, nice potluck. Can we come and eat at your potluck? It was great. I love it. And then we cut to UFO expert, played by David Cross. He doesn't even have a name. He is just UFO expert. And he's explaining some pseudoscience stuff about the landing site. Like, it's 100% great writing. Great.
Yeah.
David Cross does a great job.
Yeah.
I wish we got to see more of Bob Odenkirk, even though we just got one shot of Bob Odenkirk in like some space vampire.
Yeah.
That was cool.
That had to have been coming off the Stiller show, too. Like, that was right around there.
Yeah. It was right after the Stiller show. And was it right before Bob and Dave?
Possible.
Or was it? During, because I knew
Mr. Show was a little later, I want to say, but I'm not sure.
I don't know about that. God, because I was watching Mr. Show. Yeah, Mr. Show was already on.
Then.
Yeah, and I was watching it since it started because I knew David Cross when I saw the movie, and I didn't know David Cross until I saw Mr. Show. I knew Bob Odenkirk from the Ben Stiller show, but I didn't know David Cross. And I knew him when I saw the movie when it came out. So Mr. Show started in 95. So the year before this movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, mm-hmm. This would be in service of what independent movies do. They gave a little bit of a preview of some up and coming talent.
Well, Bob Odenkirk was a writer for Saturday Night Live.
Oh, okay.
So he would have. He was kind of part of the gang. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, he worked on Saturday Night Live, so he would have already known Christopher Guest a little bit. Some of
probably
those guys
traveled in the same circles.
Yeah, sure. Like, you know, they even though Guest wasn't working on Saturday Night Live by then, he would have probably known him, I guess.
Sure. Improv is a small world from what I know, and this is just hearing from people that actually do the improv. Yeah. Like,
and a lot of these guys are Second City.
That I listen.
A lot of these guys are Second City.
Exactly.
Bob Odenkirk might be Second City also.
Yeah, and that's improv stuff. Yeah. So.
Well, there's a few, like, there's what probably more now, but back in the day it was like, well, Groundlings. What was the other one? There's like a more of a West Coast one.
Yeah, I wouldn't know.
Yeah, there's a few like of the big improv groups where you kind of like learn shit. Like,
sure.
Kind of cut your teeth in, I should say, but
yeah. The mockumentary then switches to the town dentist, Dr. Alan Pearl, played by Eugene Levy. Alan believes that he inherited his funny bone from his grandfather, Chaim Pearl Gut. I researched that. I made sure that I said that correctly.
Could just ask me, bro.
And his grandfather was very big in the Yiddish theater in New York. And Alan attempts to be funny, but it falls flat. I know how that goes. We cut to a title card that reads The Auditions. Then we get a quick exterior shot of the local high school. Cuts to the interior hallway where townspeople are waiting to audition. And this is the one shot where Bob Odenkirk is. And that's it. I thought we were going to get some audition from him. I was like, yeah, it's cool. And I'm like, damn.
It was probably filmed and cut.
Then cuts to the interior of the audition room where there's an older man played by James McQueen and is singing Lightning Strikes by Lou Christie. It's a pretty good song. The casting table that is reviewing or judging the auditions is the high school music teacher, Lloyd Miller, played by Bob Balaban, and then some unknown dude. He never gets introduced. And Corky is there as well. The auditions continue. There's a ping pong guy that like spits it out and catches. Like, he's juggling with his mouth and ping pongs. There's a Raging Bull monologue guy.
I love that guy. Like, I just love that guy. He's great.
It was funny because it just fell flat. Like, there was... I thought
it was like the one of the best parts of that. Like, I just... He's got to be somebody's... Like, maybe he worked on the film. But he's just hilarious because it was just so violent. Like, you know, like just really that's
sure. That's
what he chose?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, like, I get
so
get
angry.
Why.
Yeah. I was just like, oh.
Lloyd then gives his interview. For the last 15 years, Lloyd has been putting on the yearly show at the high school by himself without any problem whatsoever. However, this year he will be working with a New York professional, Corky St. Clair, and he will be the musical director and not the director. There's tension building there.
It's also that thing where Bob Balaban is really the only like sane person in this movie.
Because
he's like, this is just horrible and crazy. Whereas everybody else is like, so starstruck by Corky.
He's from New York.
Yeah, everybody's just like, he is so great. Everything is terrible that Corky touches. Yeah. And everybody else is like, he's amazing. And then you have Bob Balaban, who's like, oh my god, this guy's terrible. I actually have a degree in music, and Corky's an idiot, you know. Mm-hmm. Which I always love Bob Balaban, but
he's
great
too.
Yeah,
well, that's the thing, the movie has so much like nuance when it comes to like those little things. It's like, because he's a composer and he's a music guy, he doesn't respect Corky's vision or anything, because it's like, because it's not, he's not theater, you know what I mean? He is and he isn't. He's the music side of it. So that's why when you watch the end part, and I'll get to my comment about that later, but there's definitely a separation. It's like, I'm doing my shit. I don't care what you're doing on stage. Mm-hmm. We're going to do the best that we can with what we're doing. And there's a separation, because at the end of the day, they're like, oh yeah, the actual musicians and the music was great.
Yeah, the music was
here was a whole different story. Yeah. But I think that's part of it. It's like, you know, this person's an idiot or whatever, but it's like, it doesn't matter, because I'm doing the best of what I can. It doesn't matter.
Well, I think it was
especially
just also
in a small
annoying
town and whatever. Yeah,
that Corky was getting all the accolades, and he's the only real musician there. He's the only actually talented person there, and he's the only one who knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And Corky's terrible. And he actually, I think Balaban's character had a vision for how, a real vision of how everything should go. And I think even watching it, he knows how terrible it is. And then, yeah, the musicians were great because they were real musicians, you know?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, they brought in, like, really good musicians. Yeah.
But that's the separation, though. It's like when it comes to theater, I feel like there's the talent and then the creative.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And the creative and the talent is on one side. But for the most part, it's like I said, it's like, we're going to do this music. We're going to do a great job. And you'd want the accolades come with the acting and the portrayal on stage, of course. But, you know, like, it depends on whoever's, like, looking at this. Like, you know, what does Guffman think, honestly, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, exactly. Like, this small town has all these great musicians in it.
I know.
How come it doesn't have one? Well, it does. It has one actor, and that's Louis Arquette. Yeah. You know, it's, everybody else is just terrible.
So we're back to the auditions, and Libby is trying out. She sings Teacher's Pet by Doris Day. Corky likes her energy. Lloyd likes her looks.
See, and I should be very attracted and probably get a little bit of a chub from that, but I didn't. That's why I know she's greasy, filmed up.
Meg, did you get a chub from it?
I didn't, but I will if you guys need me to.
I'm okay.
Yeah.
Trevor, did you chub up for that at all? It was erotic.
Yeah, there was a little turgidity there, but I wouldn't call it a chub. Yeah. There was some arousing feelings, yeah.
I don't know. I was like my eye was opening, but then it went, no, we're
good. I thought you were like giving me an eye, like, yeah.
There you go. Turgidity. It's all about turgidity.
Turgidity. We cut to the hall where Alan is scoping out a woman's cleavage. Ron and Sheila make their entrance. The couple can't believe Alan is here for the audition. Ron makes a joke at Alan's expense. Cut to Libby finishing her audition, and then Alan's turn. He breaks into song. Corky seems to be pleased with his audition. Ron in the hall does breathing exercises. Alan finishes his audition a little off key in time. Corky and Lloyd seem upbeat about his performance. Next is Ron and Sheila, and they have a little handshake before going into the audition room. When inside, the couple perform Midnight at the Oasis. Corky looks pleased, but Lloyd seems disheartened.
They're just terrible singers. Yeah. So bad.
Yeah.
Are they, like, I know Fred. You know what I mean? That's what you're going to get out of him. That's, I don't think there's anything greater or lower. It's just that level. But do you think Catherine has a little bit more to it, or do you think she could actually sing, or is that it?
Yeah, because she sang in Mighty Wind.
But that's like country folk music. That was, you know, that's not.
Are you singing? What are you trying to put it up against?
She performed a song that was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah, but.
And it was actually a really good song. Like, right. I liked it.
I'll have to look into that more.
I felt like she could. She was a good singer.
I don't think she was
Toni Braxton, Whitney Houston level, but I think she's a good enough singer.
Well, they were singing off key on purpose.
Oh, for sure.
Well, I know that, but I think that's what Fred has, though. I think that's where Fred lives.
I could see him being a good singer. I'll look into it, though. I'll find out if he has any albums.
More research on this. Well, like next time, we'll come back to this. Like, but yeah, I'm really curious about that. Make some notes, Trevor. Thank you.
You got it. Then we go to an interview scene with Corky, and he's confessing that he's a little surprised by Alan's audition. Weirdly enough, Corky ran into Mrs. Pearl when he was shopping for clothes for his wife, Bonnie, because he does all of her shopping. Well, what he and Mrs. Pearl talked about really wasn't all that important. We cut to the UFO abductee, played by Paul Dooley, talking about his abduction. I love Paul Dooley.
He's great. Or he was.
Cut to Corky, who's planning for the play. This scene focuses on Corky's dance style, which is hip thrusting while walking back and forth. he's wearing his jeans backwards.
No, yeah. That was like kid and play thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Was it kid and play? No, it was crisscross.
And then there's a title card that reads, The First Rehearsals. We get a quick exterior shot of the high school gym. Inside, Corky is doing acting exercises with the actors. The scene cuts to Mrs. Alan Pearl's interview. That's all she's known as. She doesn't get any other name. She's just Mrs. Alan Pearl. Mm-hmm. She's looking forward to meeting more people other than the Scrabble Club people and other people with babies. She wants connections. She just wants more people to talk to because she's in a small town. In her interview, Libby talks about Corky's vision. Then Alan gives an interview where he is ecstatic about the opportunity to act, but then he's grateful that he didn't take up acting sooner because it would have been a lot of waste of time. Does that sound, to me, it doesn't sound like that matches. I guess what he, to me, what he's saying was like, he's glad that he didn't act when he was going to dentist school because he would have been broke and poor. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
I think he's saying that he was able to build a life around dentistry and then okay. had the, you know, the ability to later on do what he wanted to.
But he's glad that he didn't follow his passion earlier because he would have been broke and not a dentist and be well off.
Probably doing gay porn, honestly.
Well,
those eyebrows?
I'm still unsure about what it means at the end. Like for him, like I didn't really fully get that. We could talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, because I kind of forgot about that, and it threw me off a little bit.
Then we get to Ron and Sheila, who are surprised that Alan was cast in the play. Ron decides that it's going to be their goal to try and loosen him up, which doesn't pay off. They don't. It's just a throwaway line. Sheila believes Ron will be able to help everyone with their acting abilities because he gives extensive notes on Sheila's acting skills at home.
like hours worth. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And she's just so nonchalant about it. Ron's like,
I think that's why she's an alcoholic.
Yes, I think so too. Then we cut to Corky driving up to a trailer in the rural part of town. He's there to convince the retired town taxidermist, Clifford Woolley. A taxidermist? Yeah. It's like, I got to get you to be in here. Then Clifford Woolley's played by Louis Arquette, and he's going to be the narrator of the play. After that, he visits the town mechanic, Johnny Savage, played by Matt Keeslar. And there's more than enough reason for Corky to want to visit the tall, handsome-looking, or the handsome Johnny Savage.
He's the hot bad boy of the town.
Yes, yeah. Then his father, Red Savage, played by Brian Doyle Murray, eyes Corky warily. I just just standing there like,
what's this guy all about? Yeah.
You know what the look. Like, that was the Midwest. Homosexual, get away from my son.
Yes, yes, yes.
Go change that alternator. Get away from this tater.
I might be making a jump. Did either of you...
Are you saying you're jumping to a conclusion?
Well, yeah.
Because Paul Dooley... No, that's not Paul Dooley. That's the other one.
Does Brian Doyle Murray have facial features that are similar to Bill Murray?
They're brothers.
Well, they're brothers.
I did not know that. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I know that, but fucking so does Kyler Murray, but he's not related to Bill Murray.
Really? Do we need to...
Brian Doyle Murray is in almost every movie that Bill Murray's in. Do I need Bill to explain
genetics?
I understand how that works. I understand it. But what I'm saying is that just because he had the last name,
two
I
brothers.
I didn't know that this was his brother. Mm-hmm. I did not know.
He's in almost every movie with him.
I
yeah, he was
can
the mayor.
Recall some of that.
Yeah, he was in Groundhog Day.
He's okay,
in,
yeah, okay.
Mr. Mayor?
I believe he's in Ghostbusters.
I don't remember that.
One or two, one
he's
or the
in,
other.
I think he's in one of them, but I don't think he's in both of them.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember.
He has have small parts where he just pops in.
Here's the sibling, and they were
his,
all
the other
near,
brother was in Scrooged.
They're all near and around film, but it's Bill Murray, Joel Murray, John Murray, Edward Murray, Nancy Murray, Andy Murray.
Oh, damn.
And there's actually more.
His younger brother played his brother in Scrooged. When he goes back to, you know, see his brother, that's his real brother, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Peggy Murray, Laura Murray. But they're all very film-centric, I want to say. I think maybe a couple aren't, but the older ones definitely are. Like Bill
and Brian have worked together so many, you know, over the years so much.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, I had no idea. I had not really put that together at all up until I watched this movie and was like, oh, am I just seeing things because I wanted to?
I always thought it was funny that Brian was in Christmas Vacation because Bill and Chevy Chase hated each other for so long.
No.
Yeah. I mean, Joel was in that God Bless America where he was the guy that was dying and he had that girl with him and they went on like a shooting spree.
Okay.
Did you ever watch that? Great movie.
No, I think I'm thinking of the bank robbing one with Randy Quaid. Anyway,
another good career. Yeah. That's all there is to it. But they have all been in movies together. They've been in movies, two of them, you know, it's like, but yeah, they're for the most part, it's those two.
All right.
The older two.
Cool. Thank you. Corky's giving sexy eyes to Johnny Savage.
Oh, yeah. Who wouldn't?
And then we cut to an exterior night shot of a house where the actors are all inside, the music director, everybody. The actors, yeah, everybody.
Cast and crew.
Yep. Reading scenes, practicing songs. Cut to the next day interior in a car dealership for some reason, or an auto part store. I'm not sure. They're dancing. I don't know why exactly they chose to here. Like, why they chose to dance in that place.
Space?
Sure, I guess. I don't know. It was just weird.
I mean, you got to think of, like, there's only so many large places where you can hold these kind of things in small towns. So.
Well, yeah, it could have been due to maybe something was happening where they were supposed to film and they couldn't. So they're just like, okay, well, can we film in here? Then we cut to the interior school gym where Ron, Sheila, Libby, Alan, and Johnny all practice Stool Boom. Stool Boom. It's one of the play's musical numbers. Lloyd approaches Corky. He looks frustrated. In very low volume, he suggests that Corky should rewrite the music. And there's a back and forth between the two. Eventually, Lloyd just backs away from his desire to rewrite the music. Like, he tries to... Like, he comes at him. He's like, hey... Hey, we should rewrite the music. Corky's like, what? What do you want me to do? Corky, do you want me to get louder? Like, that's too loud. I think he was just, it came off to me he was trying to make Lloyd uncomfortable in whatever he was doing because he knew that Lloyd didn't like his music.
Mm-hmm.
Then comes Chop Suey, the town Chinese restaurant where the Pearls and the Albertsons are having dinner. Alan talks about what people who've actually been to China have told him compared to what Ron says about China, having never been there at all.
Yeah.
Like they cut open the heads of the monkeys and serve you brains. And Alan's like, my friends from who they recently came back from China said they don't do that at all.
He's like, the food's not as good in China as it is here.
Yeah,
it's so much better here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Ron basically, or Alan basically says, so what, have you guys been anywhere? They don't talk about it. Sheila decides that she's going to go ahead and ask Mrs. Pearl what's it like to be with a circumcised man. And like through some hilarious like stuff that's really only, I think it's really just Sheila. She keeps talking, and Ron tries to quiet her, and she's like,
just
"No,
just wasted." Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
He keeps ordering like, maybe, coffee. Yeah, can we get some coffee over here?
You should eat.
She just starts going on about how long anything you can get out of town, you can get here. Everything's here in Blaine. Like, she clearly just doesn't want to leave.
Yeah, yeah.
And more, maybe she's afraid of leaving town, and that's why they have never gone anywhere.
Yeah,
and she's one of those people who's like, we convince other people to leave town so that we can make a buck here and there, but I don't want to leave town. I'm too scared.
Yeah, and then I don't remember how it segues into her being like, yeah, like, and I've never had to like, I don't remember how exactly, but she alludes to like, and I'm never sexually dissatisfied because Ron has a big dick or something like that. But however it happens, it gets to where Ron goes, all right, so I had to go have a penis reduction. Like, yeah. I had to go
to... Because she was talking... She said, well, then he told me I should get a vagina enlargement.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Because it was too big. Yeah. And then, so instead, he got the...
Yeah.
The reduction.
Yeah.
And then because Dr. Pearl is a medical man, he decides he wants to show in the Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, he's like, hey, does this look normal? Yeah. Alan's like, no, I'm not looking. I'm not looking.
No.
The next day at the gym, Corky announces that he sent letters to critics to come see Red, White, and Blaine in Blaine, Missouri. There was one that responded in kind. That critic is Mort Guffman. What it means is that they might be going to Broadway if the reviews are good enough. The mockumentary then cuts to an interior billiards hall. Libby is surprised to learn that New York is on an island that's full of people of different colors and ideas, and she can't wait to meet men. Italians, specifically. That's it. She doesn't give any more other type of man other than Italians. Ron and Sheila talk about their real goal, which is Hollywood, not the plays and stage in New York. He doesn't want to remember a bunch of lines. Just wants to, like, do it one at a time.
Yeah, one take.
Yeah. Sheila really wants to try out an acting technique. Like, I close my eyes when I look at you, and I look away, and I open them. Like, what?
I love that.
Yeah. She, like, messes it up, too, at the beginning. Like, she look, like she has her eyes open when she's looking, and then she looks away. She's like, oh, yeah, that's right. I got to. Yeah.
Like, you look at him, and then you look away, and then you open him.
Yeah.
But then when you look at him, you close your eyes, and then you look away. Yeah. Good stuff.
Corky talks about how the cast doesn't understand how big the Guffman News really is. They don't know the New York thing. Corky doesn't want to go back to off Broadway scene. So the Mr. Guffman thing is a really big deal, and Corky will do anything to get to the real Broadway world. Corky, in front of the town council, asks for $100,000 budget increase. They deny him. He tries to shame them into giving him the money, but the council doesn't give him the money. At the gym, Lloyd tells the cast and crew that he's looking to take over because Corky left the show. We cut to Libby, Ron, and Sheila, and Alan convincing Corky to stay and help them put on the play. Like, I love that. It must have felt shitty for Lloyd. Like, I'll be doing it, and they all leave. Like, yeah. Well, not everybody. Yeah. The four actors, they're like, we're going. We're gotta get, we have to get Corky.
They're just running through the streets. Yeah, yes, you know, they're just running through the streets and straight to his house.
Yeah.
And I love how it was Parker Posey leading the pack, and then immediately she's like, you guys leave him alone, and then she takes off.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like, you guys are like, just leave him alone. He just needs to be alone.
Yeah. Then we cut to they could get to Corky's place. They try to get him to come back on, but he's busy in his bathtub, taking a bubble bath, listening to mariachi music, which I thought was great. It's like, that's fucking great. Mm-hmm. Then Libby, in her interview, states she can always go back to the DQ, and she's cooking a single chicken wing as she gives her interview.
The saddest chicken wing ever. That is just... Like, she's just fanning with a paper plate, you know, just so sad. Smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
Just the white trash queen right there. Just, I'm making myself a chicken wing. Yep. That's all I'm going
to
eat.
Yep. Well, that's all she's got to, that's all money she has to afford them to.
That's the thing. She left the DQ to do this play, but this play doesn't pay you anything. No. So it's like you gave up your only income.
Yeah. Sheila can't stop crying. Ron is very dismissive of her feelings. Something about a quarterback. He's like, when our quarterback went down and our next quarterback went down on our next one, we just got up. Like,
but you're strong, Ron. Yeah, you're strong.
Yeah. Just so ridiculous. Yeah. The total opposite is happening. Alan and Mrs. Pearl are bowling. They're okay. They're like totally fine. Nothing's wrong. Alan's just like, whatever. I guess I'll just go back to doing dentistry. Yeah. He tries to brush it off, but he doesn't. He can't look at the camera. Like, he can't look straight onto the camera, so you know he's lying about it. Mrs. Allen has some sympathy for Corky. She confesses that she's never seen Corky's wife. Maybe she's just not very supportive of Corky.
Yeah. Like, she is of her husband.
For real.
Yeah. I think that
they're not that worldly in this town. They don't realize that he is a homosexual.
Yeah.
Only Brian Doyle Murray knows that he's a homosexual. He could tell.
Yeah.
Everybody else is just like, there's something a little different about this guy, but it's because he's one of those drama people. And they're just different.
He's just in the theater.
Yeah.
Then the next scene is the mayor and Gwen are attempting to bring Corky back on board. All the ass kissing makes Corky feel very special. Then we cut back to the gym where the cast and crew are welcoming Corky back to the play. Lloyd looks dumbfounded, and immediately they get back to practicing for the big sesquicentennial play.
I feel like there's some scenes missing there.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just like, hey, I'm gone. I'm back, guys. I gotcha. I'm like, Corky has returned.
Yeah, no, it probably got cut for time.
There's not a whole, I mean, this is a really short movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really quick movie. They didn't write a lot. I mean, they wrote the movie.
I thought it was
all
improv.
It's mostly improv. But so I mean, this is just the whole improvisational movie.
Yeah, but when you're cutting this movie, you're like, okay, so he's gone. And then like, what makes him just come back? Is he like, it'd be funny if he was like creeping around corners, like listening to people, you know, just like a weird, almost like what is it, Arrested Development kind of scene, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
He's just in the air ducts or something and, like, listening to people. And he's like, oh, they need me back. Like, it's like, I'm past the money now. They need me. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he well, needed that getting, kind yeah. of, he needed that kind of validation to come back, you know? He would have came back anyways.
He didn't need any kind of, he needed one person to say please, and yeah. he would be back in a yeah. second. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like, he yeah. doesn't, yeah.
And it wasn't the actors. He needed it from the town council. Because yeah. those were the ones that, like, weren't supporting his dream. And so he needed them to grovel to him.
But at that point, like, it'd be great if they just they're like secret meeting guys. Let's just like let's go around town and let a couple of rumors go out. I bet he comes back. Like, oh, we really miss you. And like, I wish we sure. had him back. You know, the you know, just to feed the ego, you know, like, yeah, you're not gonna get the money, but
of course. It's all for Duffman.
He just kind of came back, and you're like, why, how?
You're overthinking this.
Of course I'm overthinking
you
it.
You overthink
why
a lot.
Why wouldn't I overthink it?
Yeah, this is a movie where everybody actually does believe that he's great, except for Bob Balaban.
Yep.
And they really do want him back. They just can't give him any of the money he wants.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, yeah, a lot of but stuff was saying, left like, on the cutting room floor for time and whatever, but most of this is just, they're just making this cute, like, hilarious little film, and there isn't a whole lot of, like, backstory or anything.
I'm just saying, of the entire movie, though, this is the one part where I was kind of like, you're not leaving something on the table, but there's continuity issues for me, okay?
I'm sure.
I like continuity.
No, I'll agree.
There's nothing wrong with continuity.
I'll agree with you.
I think that it worked better to show just how easy it was to get him back.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that you're right.
You didn't but it's
need
just
to
like
have any kind of major begging. You just needed, you know, Larry Miller to go in there and just say, hey, please, we think
yeah.
you're great.
Yeah, yes, that's it. That's yeah, all, that's
he's
it.
He's like, oh, really? You think I'm great? Okay, I'll be back.
He just
really
wanted
all
he
needed.
Yeah, he just yeah. wanted to prove his point. He wanted yeah. to feel like he was the one in the position mm-hmm. of power because yeah. he was the, this was his
Because Corky's a simpleton
idea.
And you can't have, you can't have a really smart simpleton. It doesn't make sense, so.
If I was to this scene, ooh. Farmer's market, boom. They're out there. They're like, have you guys seen Corky? They're like, no, we haven't seen him in his house or anything. And then they're like, we really want him back because, you know, his vision and everything he wanted is quite on point, blah, blah, blah. And like, there's still no money, but he's just such a genius. You know what I mean? Just like five lines, you know?
No, I think it's funnier the way
they
did
it. And
then
he's in the background and he goes, you know, just no, does that fucking face.
That's a cartoon. I think it's funnier the way they did it. I think it's just hilarious the way it was just like, he's like, I'm going to hold my ground. I'm not going to do anything. They're like, come on, Corey, we really need you. Oh, okay.
But they didn't say it. There's no scene where they say it to him.
They go to him and yeah. they say, we need you back. Hey, we can't do this without you. Yeah, I think you might have been drunk.
Yeah. Because like, there's a specific scene where Gwen Fabian and Larry Miller go to Corky's place. Cause
she's
practically
in tears because she needs her relative.
Yes.
To be represented in this play.
And celebrated.
So yes. I glossed over that. We'll just say that.
Okay.
All right.
Because I thought it was just like him going back there, going, "Okay, I'm back. I'm going to do this."
Okay, so
I
don't
know. There
now
was
now we know
a thing.
Josh got drunk and passed out for 2 minutes and woke up and did not understand what was happening.
It was not a pass out. What I was doing was probably, you know,
we
groundbreaking,
don't wanna know.
groundbreaking okay. art stuff.
Art okay. stuff.
Yeah,
he was being Corky in his own way.
He was Corkying.
Yeah, I was like, he quit doesn't mean I need to quit.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was like, I'm going to take up that mantle. And apparently they begged him to come
back. Did you say mantle or manhole?
Both of them.
Okay.
Yeah. Car Ramrod.
No.
That's right.
Car Ramrod.
Well, either way, Corky is going to welcome the challenge like a French man in the Middle Ages. It's like, what? I paraphrased the Middle Ages part, but I didn't understand the what. Like,
he's talking about the glove slap.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yes. Yeah.
See, I caught that part.
There you go. So, practicing.
Challenge you to a duel.
Yep.
Oh, that makes me miss Peter Sellers.
Practice and production montage to Stool and Boom, or to Stool Boom. Corky speaks to Alan about his glasses. The glasses will not be congruent with the setting they are trying to portray in the opening song. Alan says that's going to be a little bit of a problem because his glasses let him see while also helping to correct his extreme case of esotropia, which is lazy eye. And esotropia being the name of when the eyes go in towards the nose. Another title card appears on screen and says the day of the show. There's an exterior shot that shows the town square filled with townspeople. Some of the town's children are singing a song about Blaine. Inside the gym, final preparations are underway for the play's opening. Libby hands Corky a telephone, and Corky is very irate that Johnny's father is keeping him out of the show. Corky's going to have to figure something out.
It's very reminiscent of, like, who was it? John Voight in Zoolander.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, you think it's great? Haven't you waiting to talk to India? Like, just that very unapproving, like.
Earlier when we were discussing this, I actually was thinking that, so I wonder if Ben Stiller didn't get a little bit from this for his characters in Zoolander.
And they were also, close too, I imagine. Or even probably was like, you know.
When Christopher Guest was describing himself as a construction worker, it was reminding me of Ben Stiller as a miner.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
And how he thought a miner should act.
We cut to Corky being dressed in Johnny's costume. There's 15 minutes. Everyone is getting ready for the curtain call. Sheila can't find the lilac dress. Too many fudge sundaes, the costume director says. Lloyd conducts the orchestra until the places are called for the actors. Corky reminds Alan to ditch the glasses for the opening number. A shot of the seat of honor that is reserved for Mr. Guffman. More orchestra shots. Libby informs Corky that Guffman is not in his seat. Everyone begins to panic. Corky promises them it is normal for New York types to be late.
So, like, you know, like, I think this is across the board consistent, but has there ever been, like, smiling composers or orchestra people? You know what I mean? Like, there's, like, seriousness, no joy in the, sure, maybe later on, maybe when it's done, maybe it's like you're like nerves and stuff like that. But I want to say, and I haven't watched a lot, obviously, but this one, they were all very straight faced. And even like the what's his name, like his portrayal of it, of being the composer, was very like
conductor.
Exactly. Yeah. Conductor. Sorry. But just like no joy in it. You know what I mean? Like it's just very strange.
Oh yeah, they were very purposefully.
But I'm saying that actually, I feel like anything I've ever seen when it comes to like orchestras, it's kind of the same thing. And obviously, it's a portrayal of that.
And well, they're working really hard when they're doing it.
Yeah, but no one's smiling when they do it at all is my thing. You know, even though you have a fucking violin on you, you can still smile. You know what I mean?
It's a lot of work.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying there's no.
They're often also reading at the same time. They're reading and they're playing. They're reading the music. And
do you think they teach them not to smile while they do it? They're like, no smiles.
Well, I don't know. Why don't you watch a documentary on it?
I don't want to watch documentaries. Well, I hate them.
I think you should.
I'd rather read a paragraph. Call it a day.
The orchestra ends with their prelude song. Or the orchestra ends their prelude song with flair. The show begins. The narrator introduces everybody to the scene. Ron and Sheila play their part of the Potters, while Corky and Libby play their romantic roles. Shortly after, Alan as Blaine Fabian enters stage right. The five actors perform the opening song, Covered Wagons. The next play scene is about the time Jimmy Bean gave President McKinley a stool. During the narration, Mr. Guffman arrives and is seated in his reserved spot. The cast sees this and is excited. At one point, they're like, should we go back and do the first number? Like, we should just go back and do the first song again. I would have been hilarious if they had done that. Then the five performers go out and sing the second musical number, Stool Boom. The play breaks for intermission. Mrs. Pearl has nothing but praise for Alan. Corky is also receiving praise from Don Lake and Steve Stark. Steve really wishes he was in the show.
He really wishes he was in the show.
The next number is set during World War I. Corky and Libby perform A Penny for Your Thoughts.
Oh, that one was a good one. That was a good one. That's like that's quality shit right there. That's like that should be on the list of what would that be? The Tony?
The Tony?
No.
Is it a Tony Award?
No.
No, you're thinking of the what is it? The Razzie.
No, when it's a play, it's a Tony.
Well, but this is
Yes. A play would be a Tony.
Yeah, like if this was a play and that song was played, that song I think is Tony worthy.
Yes, okay. if it didn't go to like being on the radio or anything, because then it could also be nominated for a Grammy. But it's mostly Tonys or mostly strictly just stage
stuff. Yeah. But I think that song, American classic, right there. All right. I think I wanna talk to the powers that be. I'm gonna send old T-Dog a letter, T&E. Be like, hey guys, what do you think?
Okay.
Well, Steve cries during the number, so he was very much moved, like you were.
Yeah.
Backstage, Ron is having Sheila fix his hair before she does hers.
Yeah. She's like, I need to get ready too.
Yes.
Once again, this is drunken notes, but I wrote, but it's like Nathan Lane being impressed with two lions getting ready for sex. I don't know what that means.
I don't know either.
I don't know what the hell that means. Okay.
Maybe that was A Penny for Your Thoughts.
I think it was part of that, but sure. It was like, yeah.
Then the narrator sets up the first ever UFO encounter that happened in 1946. Libby, Ron, and Sheila and Corky play townsfolk while Alan plays the alien. The next play number is Nothing Ever Happens on Mars.
Yeah.
When Alan comes out from behind the alien craft, or he tries to come through it, his head gets stuck.
And the audience loved it. Yeah. The kids were laughing. Yes. It was good times.
Planned, yeah.
Yeah.
The narrator finishes the play by introducing the final numbers, which is Colors of America, in which all the actors come out to just parade around the stage, and then the stage and audience for the final number. They don't do any singing. They just march around waving stuff as like confetti and balloons fall.
Yeah.
The cast and Corky receive standing ovations. Backstage, Corky is congratulated by the cast. He tells them he is going to go get Mr. Guffman. He apologizes and admits to the shortcomings of the play, which is followed up with, do you think we can make it to Broadway, Mr. Guffman? And Mr. Guffman replies, yeah, I think so. I think you can. Corky is so very relieved to hear those words, so Corky invites the critic backstage to meet the cast. In the dressing rooms, Mr. Guffman is introduced to the cast. Everyone takes a turn to introduce themselves. While this is happening, the stage director hands Corky a note. Everyone wants Mr. Guffman to make a speech. When he is prompted to make a speech, he sadly informs them that he is not Mr. Guffman.
This is such a num-num part like everything's fucked.
Yep.
They're like,
yep.
Oh, the faces. Oh, it's so delicious.
In fact, he's Roy Loomis, and he came down from Deming to see his niece's first baby. Everyone is shocked, disappointed, gutted. Corky reads the note that was handed to him regarding Mr. Guffman. A snowstorm caused all the flights to be canceled from New York. A final title card appears on screen 3 months later. The Pearls have moved to Miami. Alan is performing for some older adults in a retirement community. Then it cuts over to Ron and Sheila, who have moved to Los Angeles to be extras in commercials. That's the greatest. No, we don't need you to do anything. Like, I tried, like I asked for direct. Like, they want me to do it.
They're living the life of, they're like, just, you know, we're actors here living in LA, and they're just minor actors, but in their minds, they're finally, you know, fulfilling this dream. And they left blame.
Yeah.
Was that the Nothing Else Like Them?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Then it goes to Libby, who went back to Dairy Queen, and she wants to invent a healthy blizzard. Now for Corky. He's moved back to New York. He contacted Mr. Guffman, who was able to get Corky an audition in Mr. Guffman's new Broadway play, which is a revival of My Fair Lady. He's auditioning for the role of Henry Higgins, and his opposite is, I don't remember the name of the role opposite of Henry Higgins, but that character's from, oh, what was it? God damn it. She has a Cockney accent. So she doesn't pronounce the H's. You're talking about Pygmalion. Yeah. Then Corky's like, so she doesn't pronounce the H's. Mm-hmm. So it's Henry Egan. Like, he doesn't do a good English accent at all. Like, it's horrible.
Yeah.
That it was hilarious.
Terrible,
But in the meantime, when he isn't acting or directing, he's working on his shop that sells all of his memorabilia and treasures, i.e. my Dinner with Andre action figures. Roll credits. Josh, what did you think of this movie?
There's a lot to it. Overall, it's dry, but it's entertaining. This is early for them. As well, you know, like of all the stuff they did, but they followed suit with a lot of it. The cast is great. Like I said, minus my little, you know, whatever I was doing while I watched this movie, and I missed that little small part. I was like, that's a big deal there. I don't know about that, you know. And as you, I never watched this movie.
Oh, okay. I did. Right.
Yeah, like I was talking with Megs earlier. Every time I saw it, it looked like it was a mentally handicapped man child with a beanie on his head. And I was like, the title made sense. I was like, waiting for Guffman to do what? I don't know. And then I never read the jacket, so it was like, okay. And later on, I just kind of forgot about it. But as far as indie movies go, you know, you got a good cast. Like, yeah. It has a lot of ups.
Yeah.
You know, Parker Posey, sure, whatever, that troll.
You're entitled to your opinion.
She's not a troll. Sorry. What I mean is, she looks sticky. Like, I don't want to touch her.
Megs,
I wouldn't touch her with your dick.
Oh, thanks.
I think she looked.
I would.
Sure, that's all right. That's all right. I understand what you mean. I have similar opinions of people as well.
Yeah, like Meg Ryan.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, she's not.
Oh, it was a setup. Fuck you. Meg Ryan's fucking amazing. Not anymore, but. Hey, listen.
To me, she was not that person.
Do you even have a heart in there, dude?
Yeah, probably.
Maybe. Metaphorically, no. But biologically, that's my thoughts to the movie. Are we asking to pick, like, you want some numbies here?
Give me your rating.
We're rating? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it 3.5 invisible Tonys.
Invisible Tonys. All right. Okay.
Because they're not there, but in their minds, they're there.
All right. Megs, how about yourself?
Well, I thought the movie was hilarious. I've always thought the movie was hilarious. It hasn't stopped being just as hilarious as it was the first time I saw it.
You know, when you're talking, I'm hearing, don't stop believing.
Is that what you're hearing?
I don't think I can sing that song, but it's okay.
You can't get that.
No, I'm saying just legally.
That's true, too. Yeah, so stop. I love it. I think it's great. I don't have any complaints at all about the film. I don't think there were any continuity errors.
There was. I thought there was.
I do wish, knowing now that Bob Odenkirk was left on the floor, I wish there was. I would like to see a little of that. I found out that Frances Fisher was also left on the floor, and that would have been interesting. She played Johnny's mother.
Okay.
But that would be. I don't know. She's fine. I guess she's. I don't really care about her, but I like her. That would be interesting to see what Johnny's mother would have brought to the film.
Sure.
But probably not much was needed from her. I love the movie, and I'm going to give this movie 4 American sweet and sour sauces, not the stuff you get in China.
Nice.
The good stuff.
Very cool. Thank you for your rating, too.
And what about you, Mr. Guffman? What do you think?
I thought this movie was funny. Like, I thought it was hilarious, much like yourself. I enjoyed the comedy. I enjoy a good dry humor. If it's well written, it'll get me giggling. And they did. Mm-hmm. They had me, as I had said earlier, every punchline I laughed at.
Yeah.
Like, it wherever they meant for there to be laughs, they got me. Mm-hmm. They did a great job at it. I agree with you. I wish they would have kept some things in there, like Bob Odenkirk. I don't know who Frances Fisher was or whoever you said.
She was with Clint Eastwood back in the day. They have a kid together.
Oh, okay, okay.
She was on the show. What was that show? Early Delivery. What was that show? Was it Early Delivery? I don't know. She was on a few some shows. She's been in some movies. She's a redheaded. You would recognize her.
I'm pretty sure I have seen her.
Yeah. I'm thinking Early Edition was the show that she used to be on. I don't know. She's in a bunch of stuff.
Oh, yes.
Good actress. Yeah. She's good stuff. I like her a lot. She was actually in a lot of Clint Eastwood films.
Mm.
That makes sense.
Even after Unforgiven. They broke up. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, okay. Yeah, I've definitely seen her.
Titanic, she was the mom?
She.
Okay.
I don't know. I only saw that terrible movie once. But, yeah, she's fine. But... my main thing is because I was very much in love with Bob Odenkirk at one time in my life.
Okay.
And I'm still in love with that young Bob Odenkirk.
Okay.
It's much the older one. But back then, I would have loved to have seen him in this movie.
I think it would have been cool. I think it would have just been one of those, like, oh, yeah, he's in here. Like David Cross, you know? Like, mm-hmm. Even for David Cross's small little bit, he was still great. Like, that was classic David Cross.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
He still could play that same exact role
exactly.
at the drop of a hat and still nail every inflection.
Yes.
I'm going to give this movie, I'm going to give it 4 covered wagons.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. 4 covered wagons. All right. Now we will have our next movie choice, which belongs to Megs. Megs, which independent movie are we going to be watching next?
This was a tough one, Trevor.
I bet.
Because it is my favorite of so far of all of the genres that we've been doing. It is also my favorite time period in film.
Okay.
And I had a lot of movies that I wanted to choose from.
Yeah.
A couple of them starred Parker Posey, of course, because mm-hmm. she was in most of the movies in the 1990s. Or I should say most of the independent films in the 1990s. But the one I've chosen is a movie that I absolutely fell in love with the first time I ever watched it on VHS. I watched it back to back 2 times in a row because I thought it was so great.
Nice.
And it started my love of this director / writer. And I have, of course, subsequently seen all of his films until I started getting annoyed with some of them. But it is going to be Bottle Rocket by Wes Anderson and Owen Wilson.
Nice, nice.
Written by Wes Anderson and Owen Wilson, directed by Wes Anderson.
Yeah,
and starring both Wilson brothers. Actually, all 3 of the Wilson brothers are in the movie.
True.
Okay.
As usual.
Yeah, yeah. Very cool. Mm-hmm. I definitely remember seeing previews for this when I was young in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
No idea what it was about. I didn't watch it until maybe a couple years later. Still, that was like, would have been like 16, 15, 16 at that point. Still really didn't click.
So I could tell him Pluto TV and then... rentable.
And of course, I own the DVD.
Nice.
So you can all watch my DVD if you want to, if you don't have.
I'm good. Yeah. I'll just spend money.
I didn't know that this was a Wes Anderson movie until much later in my life. My first introduction to Wes Anderson was Tenenbaums.
Okay.
Like that was my introduction. And then after I had found out that I really liked that style, I went back.
Rushmore,
yeah. It was because of this movie that I saw Rushmore. I loved this movie so much that when Rushmore opened, I went to go see Rushmore on opening night.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I saw it at the Esplanade.
Oh, nice.
And I also saw Tenenbaums at the Esplanade a few years later when it came out. I saw that. I didn't see that one on opening night. I saw it opening weekend.
Okay.
I didn't see it on opening night.
Yeah, I was able to see, or I did the screen... I was able to do a screening of Royal Tenenbaums because when that had came out, I was working at a movie theater and it was still reels, so it was still film, and that's how you knew if your reels were spliced mm-hmm. correctly, because yep. sometimes you get backwards or upside down reels, yeah. and you're like, okay, that's not right. Yeah, that's where I'd first seen Royal Tenenbaums. I never went back to do anything with Bottle Rocket. What I meant to say was Royal Tenenbaums was my introduction to Wes Anderson, and after that is when I really started to pay attention to what Wes Anderson was releasing. So great. I'm looking forward to rewatching yeah. this. It's been been 20 years.
Yeah.
Like 26 years. Yeah.
Yeah, the 90s really were the introduction to of all the Andersons. You had yeah. Paul Thomas and sure. you know, like, and Wes and then Paul Anderson. There were three Andersons, right? There's Paul Anderson, Paul Thomas Anderson, and Wes Anderson.
Yeah, I'm unclear.
They all came, you know, you had these great movies coming out. You know, you had Magnolia and Wes was doing stuff, and it was just yeah. like, which Anderson is the best Anderson, you know?
Sure.
It's all of the Andersons.
So unique on ball ends. I don't think you really can compare, you know?
Oh, there are very different kinds of movies, but they're still, I mean, these great movies. I mean, I couldn't even decide if I wanted to do Magnolia or, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're yeah. just such great movies.
Yeah.
Boogie Nights.
Tom Cruise.
Oh, yeah. Boogie Nights. Whew. All right, cool. So Bottle Rocket. Like Josh said, you could watch it on Pluto. You can rent it, or it maybe you're just like Megs and you have the DVD of it.
I think most people probably.
You could also possibly find one of those DVDs at your local thrift store or movie place.
You could, yeah, yeah,
electronic.
Definitely.
In Arizona, we have a place called Bookman's. So yeah. if you have a similar place in your town where they have books, movies, things of that nature.
Or like a Zia.
Used.
Zia Records.
Items of used intrinsic. I don't know. I'm trying to. Yeah.
Sorry. I know. I'm trying to do
used,
something.
Used and intrinsic.
He just wants to play with his knife. That's not a knife.
That's my other knife.
Cool. Cool. Bottle Rocket it is.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
No, let me just say this real quick. If I were to make a sequel Ooh. To Waiting for Guffman, it'd be Make Blaine Great Again.
All right.
There's a Middle America air to it. I feel like they would enjoy it.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
We go, you know, very, you know, a lot of proud numbers.
All right. That's Josh's take on what he would do if he was a filmmaker.
Yeah. If I was a filmmaker. Yeah.
I see a song there.
Make Blaine great. The stool thing was about poop. Don't fuck with me. Don't even look at me in the face. It's not about making stools.
It was a double entendre.
Yeah.
Not double fucking shit.
Stool boom.
Poop. It was about taking a poop.
Or
a middle American poop.
No, it was that Blaine is the shithole of America.
I know.
Well, now that we have that out of the way for our next movie, we come to Give Me the Juice.
Give Me the Juice.
It's usually what we're watching or what we're reading or whatever is new and exciting to us. Megs, you got something?
I'm watching Mythic Quest, finally.
Oh, okay.
Finally getting into
it. I know
Mythic
about
Quest.
It. I've only watched one.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I was kind of putting it off because I love, you know, I'm a Sonny fan, but McElhaney's, you know, he's coming kind of like a little puss lately, you know, he's kind of like, I'm hanging out with Ryan Reynolds. We're best friends and we're going to go hang out. Taylor Swift. I don't know. It's just
canceled.
He's gotten into this whole, like, I don't know. He just reminds me of a Swiftie or something. Although I still love Caitlyn. I think she's kind of cool still. But Mythic Quest is fun. I think he's great on the show. I really love that little girl, the little Aussie girl, Poppy. She's adorable. F. Murray Abraham is hilarious. Unfortunately, I don't think he sticks around. I hear he leaves the series after season two, I think.
Okay.
Or during,
okay.
I don't know, at some point. I just started season two. And season two is during the pandemic, so
okay,
it's gonna be a lot of masking and a lot of weird stuff, but otherwise it's a fun show. It's fun to watch. There's nice. There is a one-off episode that I you still kind of have to watch the show for it, but there is a one-off that stars those two. I don't know why I can't remember her name. It's the gal from Penguin.
Zoe Kravitz? No,
not from the movie TV show.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yes, she played. She played the Italian Falcone name. Daughter.
Yes,
she was in.
She was my
Palm Springs.
She was in Palm Springs, yeah. And she was on.
Christy Milioti.
She was the mother from How I Met Your Mother.
Christy Milioti.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she's on a one-off episode that was really well done. It was written by Rob and his sister, and it took place in the 90s, so it had that kind of cool 90s feel, and I enjoyed that episode. But
did you watch all of Penguin?
Yeah.
Everybody did?
Yes.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. He chokes Vic. He fucking chokes him.
Yep.
I just wanted to be a dick right there. But yeah. That's cool.
It is cool. It's pretty cool that I'm watching that. It's cool stuff.
Very
fun. Pretty cool.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like being cool and doing cool things.
There's a couple other actors.
Penguins are cool.
There's a couple other actors in there that came from like smaller comedy like tropes from the internet, like the game testers.
Oh, the testers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like Ashley Burch, like I'd been, mm-hmm. I had known of her prior to her being on there. She's great.
I know she does some voice work.
Yep,
I think
yep,
for video games and stuff.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I looked into her because I enjoyed her. And there is, you know, it's not a huge cast, which I like about it. I do like that. What's his name? Jiminy Cricket.
Yeah.
Cricket.
Uh huh.
I
love that.
Why
they
can't I think of his name?
Oh,
yeah.
God, I hated her on Critical Role.
And Pootie from Community.
Oh, he.
Danny Pootie.
Yeah, Pootie. He's on the show too.
Okay.
So it's nice to see him in a different role.
Maybe he came in later because he wasn't in the first episode.
I think he is.
Maybe I'm completely missing his character.
He's kind of the money man. He handles what is it?
The marketing?
Marketing and crap that they sell.
Oh, the merch and stuff?
Merch, he's merch.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know why he's not standing out to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, cool.
I mean, he's sixth build, so.
Yeah, no, I'm.
Because he's not, I mean, he's there, but he's not
prevalent
as Poppy and
okay,
the,
okay,
the Poppy
maybe,
girl and Rob.
And maybe that's just sort of this episode. He mm-hmm. the pilot episode he wasn't in there. Maybe he comes in second. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
And there's a fun Alana Ubach is also on the show and a few episodes. She's not on all the episodes, of course, but she's probably, unfortunately, she don't see a lot of her over the years, but she at one point to me was one of the best character actresses out there, and she just you just don't see her.
Yeah,
you know, she was the maid in what is that terrible Ben Stiller movie, the one where he gets married and has De Niro.
The Fockers.
Yeah,
or Meet the Parents.
Yeah, Meet the Parents. Ugh.
Meet the Parents,
terrible,
the first one.
Terrible movies. But Alana Ubach played the Hispanic maid.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
She's also She was also in The Brady Bunch. She played Marsha's best friend, who was in love with Marsha, and she played the crack whore on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, who Frank wanted to marry.
Okay,
she's always just unrecognizable, and she can play any character. She was in Waiting. She played the angry lesbian. But she plays all these crazy roles.
Oh, the one with the bush?
Yeah.
She wasn't a lesbian.
Oh, was she wasn't?
She was just angry.
She was just angry. Okay, she was just angry. But she's just a great character actress, and it angers me that she doesn't get more work. I want her everywhere. I've always wanted her everywhere. And she just kind of pops in every now and then, does her thing, and pops out.
Nice.
But she's on
maybe
the show.
In this day and time when it's not required to as a D to get a role, she can get in there and get those deserving roles.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, because maybe she is like, I'm not going to do it. I don't want to.
Yeah. Shut up, baby.
I don't want that. I'm going to look like that little fucking pecker.
Mm-hmm.
A little saltine pekka.
Great. Thanks, Max.
You're welcome.
Josh, how about you?
All right, so got a couple.
All right.
One, watching The Reacher just came out, yep, the third season.
Yep.
Still has terrible fucking writing.
Yeah.
Like, I hate, like, I don't know who wrote this. If they're fucking just doing it as quick as they can, I don't mean to be a dick, but it is fucking terrible. Like, I'm not the most literate person on the planet, but fuck you. Like, I really don't like this shit. Not like it's, I mean, maybe they're just going line for line off the books and that's kind of like the deal they had or something. I don't know. But the show's enjoyable to a point. I'm getting tired of the Reacher guy though, a little bit, weirdly enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's and, a bitch.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. Bitch. Yeah, there's that. That's Reacher. Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. At the beginning, I was like, this is going to be another woke piece of shit. And they did some flip-flopping with stuff. And I'm like, at the end of the day, it turned out great. It is actually good. This is one of the better things that Disney has produced and made when it comes to Marvel stuff and like comics and things like that. They actually did a great job. That and the X-Men one they did was pretty good too.
Yeah.
They really went balls to the wall on it. But yeah, that's very enjoyable. So if you like want a fresh new version of Spider-Man, this is a really, it's a good one. And then my other one, it was a, I don't know if I talked about this last time because I'm the one that drinks the most when we do these things, but it's called Fable. Did I talk about this at all?
I don't know.
All right,
I don't,
so I it's don't a, it's it. An animation. It's on
That's
Hulu.
When I stop listening.
It's on
so
Hulu.
I don't
know. It's on Hulu, and it's about this guy that works for like the Yakuza kind of, but he's super goofy, and they're like, all right, you take a year off because you've done so many murders for us, more or less. And he just sits around and watches the stupidest shows on TV. And then he works for 800 yen a week, which is probably like $70. It's very low. Like 800 yeah, yen a week is not, very, not, very low when it comes to money.
Yeah.
But he like, he, whatever he's doing, it's, there's a darkness to this because it's like there was this girl, like they bring in like the pervert guy that like breaks into the house and he puts a fucking camera in the toilet or something like that. You're just like, why? But anyways, it's interesting because the main character is great. And then everything around it is just like, it feels like the debauchery and the shittiest parts of like Japan or somewhere. Like it's, I think it's, I'm pretty sure it's Japan because they're like an offshoot of the Yakuza or something like that.
Okay.
And his name is Fable, and everybody like kind of knows the name, but they're like, oh, he's not real. And he's like,
he's a fable.
Yeah, it's a very interesting animation, I'll say that. So if you like anime, check it out. There are some dark tones to it when it, like it's like they're Japan trying to anime. They're trying to turn this girl into a prostitute.
Oh jeez,
like it gets dark, but it's that's Japan most anime. Animes. Yeah. But overall, good quality, good stuff.
Very
so,
cool.
So yeah, that's a those are my things.
Cool, thanks, Josh. I recently have started watching a Fox comedy show called Going Dutch. It stars
Danny Pudi.
Danny Pudi's right. in it. Dennis Leary is the lead.
Oh, okay.
And then there's another female lead who's Dennis Leary's daughter. It's about military. Even though I did not watch this show on FX that Dennis Leary was in, the fire station mm-hmm. one, it has a lot of that like comedy leadership style to it. I know the one on FX was a little bit more dramatic, but the comedy, it feels like that, just military. It's funny. It's Dennis Leary. He knows how to deliver. Mm-hmm. He's great at it. The comedy's fucking hilarious. The writing, I'm okay with the writing. It's not going either way.
Right.
It's fucking great. I love it. Like, it's hilarious.
Cool.
Yeah.
Female lead is Taylor Mizziak, and I believe she's in the show Dave. She's the girlfriend.
Oh, is that the Little Dicky?
Little Dicky show. Okay, yeah, okay. Dave. Yeah, she's the girlfriend. Like, she gets in the milking table.
Oh, yeah.
That's her. That's her, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm really digging it. It's pretty cool. And then
I saw the previews for it, but it really doesn't jump hard for me. But
yeah,
it's better than the previews.
Better than the previews. Okay. Like I gave it a shot because I was like, all right, let's fucking give it a shot. I like Danny Pudi. I enjoy Dennis Leary's comedy. I threw it on and I found myself three episodes in real quick. I was like, all right, I'm gonna have to like really spend some time on it. It came out this year or last year.
Oh, this is very, this, yeah.
It's not going to have more than one season. Yeah, I've been digging it, and I'm really looking forward to next month. Next month, there's a whole bunch of good stuff being released. Daredevil's getting released.
Righteous Gemstones.
There's another one that I'm missing as well. Wheel of Time, or is that April?
I'm not sure.
Wheel of Time new season is coming, and I'm getting excited for that too. Oh yeah, yeah. And yeah, I've been watching Reacher. I like the action, the writing's.
Yeah.
It always plays better as a book.
Yeah, that's the writing.
I mean, the writing is the story too. I'm just saying the actual dialogue of it is just fucking.
Sometimes it works better in the book than it does on the actual screen because of the writing between the dialogue, where you can give all the nuanced stuff that you have to try and do visually.
Yeah, like all those books came out what in fucking.
90s, 2000s.
90s? Yeah, early 2000s?
All through the 2000s.
Oh, really?
I believe it was up until late 10, mid 10, early 10s. Where
15 years ago. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff has happened.
So there was 29th. There's 29. It's still going. The book series is still going.
Yeah.
So
they're reaching pretty hard.
They are. This one, the latest one's called In Too Deep.
Oh,
yep,
that's a good title. Love it, love it.
Yeah, so that's what I've been watching and getting ready to.
You're in too deep.
I am. Well, I would normally kick it over to you, Josh, to read any reviews, but we don't have any.
I'm going to review our listenings right now. All of them. Do a better job. Be better.
Be better.
You could just be a bot, too.
Just want to, like, yeah, robots, listen bot. To us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do we have robot insurance?
No.
I'll pay for it.
Little Sam Waters didn't throw
Do you know out. Who's in your bottle rocket? King Supreme. Or what do they call him? Burrito Supreme? He was in the Mike Judge. Idiocracy.
Oh, you mean Terry Crews?
Beef Supreme. Oh. No, he was the white guy with the beard. The one that, like, he's the one of the murder guys.
I'd have to see his face again. I vaguely remember.
Even if it's not, it's him.
All right.
I want to know who this is.
I want to know who this is.
Well, thanks for listening. You can go and listen to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
We have a large catalog, guys. Come on.
We have a catalog for sure.
Yeah. How many episodes are we at now?
Oh, we're in 37. We're in
37.
This would be our 37th episode. Yes.
That's a full-grown adult with at least a baby. Not us. Well, we are all in our 40s.
Are you talking about Andrew Wilson?
Who?
Andrew Wilson, one of the Wilson brothers.
What words are you saying?
Well, he's also in Idiocracy.
Yeah, that's him.
Yeah, that's one of the Wilson brothers.
Yeah, that's Beef Supreme.
Yeah. That's Future Man.
What?
He plays Future Man in Bottle Rocket.
He plays Luke
Wilson's older brother. Or was it Luke Wilson's brother? Yeah, Future Man.
Okay.
They called him Future Man.
I thought you were talking about.
It's kind of making fun of him in the movie.
All right.
But we'll find out.
He's in all Wes Anderson when you films, watch this by the movie. Way.
I've probably seen him. Mm-hmm. I've seen him. I probably mistook him for.
What was the ocean Wilson. Movie called?
What?
What was the ocean movie Zizou? Called?
Life it's kind of full. Steve
the life. Life Aquatic.
Life Aquatic with yes, Steve yes. Zissou.
Yep. Zizou, Zizou.
Yep. That was a good one.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
Angelica Houston was great in that.
Yes.
Good, greater in Tenenbaums. So.
Oh, she was so good in Tenenbaums.
Anyways, guys, we're out of here.
Yeah, we will be. So you can go and follow us at on Instagram at the Amateur Movie Review Hour, or you could go to our website, theamateurmoviereviewhour.com, and listen to us there if you don't want to listen to us on any of the other platforms. Mm. And if you feel so inclined or get lonely or want to have or have a suggestion or want Josh to read you something or
in voices, I don't know, aplenty.
Maybe you're curious about or maybe you're very intrigued about proving me wrong about something. I'm welcome to it. You can do that by emailing theamateurmoviereviewhour@gmail.com.
Or maybe you want your own brown
moment. Oh, you can have your own brown moment.
A personal brown moment.
Yeah,
my own just private to you. Brown moment. So
you, maybe you could, win a personal brown moment.
Yeah. So this is the Amateur Movie Review Hour. Thanks for listening, and I'll check you later.
Good night.
Vita Sen.